The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
It's time for the Culture Club, and we're delighted to be joined by Lynn Parker, who is the Artistic Director of Rough Magic Theatre Company. Thank you very much, Lynn. And how many years old at this stage is Rough Magic?
Oh, no, it's 40. This is our 40th anniversary. So we're having a number of little celebrations along the year, mostly around the work we're doing.
Are you with it the full 40 years?
I am, yeah. We started in 1984, a bunch of us students, Trinity UCD gang, who just started in a summer season in Players Theatre in Trinity and just kept going, you know, and here we are.
Kept going, that must mean a real love of what you do.
It certainly must. I mean, it's not all plain sailing, but it does become a kind of addiction, and I do love it. I love it. And
why?
I love being in rehearsals. It's the unexpected. It's the people you get to work with, mostly. The funniest, most entertaining, good to be with bunch of people work in theatre. And so a lot of the work we do is built around those ensembles, the kind of teams that we create, not just the actors, but the designers and technicians and...
Okay, for 40 years, how many productions a year would Rough Magic do?
Well, on average, we would, when we started, we did 7 in the first year, which was ludicrous because we were all so young and just full of energy. And of course, nobody gets paid then, so the economics doesn't play a part. But gradually, you know, you sort of become more sustainable, but there is a little bit less you can accomplish in 1 year. We still managed to sort of do between... 2 to 4 shows a year, and sometimes we're touring and sometimes we're doing development on new work, so it's pretty busy all the year round.
And what are you doing in the Kilkenny Arts Festival?
Well, this is a play that we're working on with an artist who was really very associated with Rough Magic for a number of years, Peter Hanley, one of the best actors I've ever worked with. But about 10 years ago, just over 10 years ago, he got stage fright, which is the terror for actors. And it happened all of a sudden. It happened in one moment. And in that one moment, his whole world fractured. And he fell through the crack, and he hasn't been able to perform in the normal way ever since. And that's a great loss to theatre. So when he told me that he was working on this play that actually looked this dilemma in the face, and that he intended to perform it himself with the aid of a script and whatever else he needed in terms of prompting, I was fascinated, and I just thought, I'm really excited at the thought of Peter Hanley being back on stage in whatever way. So we're doing a work in progress for Kilkenny, and that will be, you know, an excerpt of the play, not the whole thing. And then a discussion afterwards about how we're going to put the production together. And then next year, we're going to produce the whole thing.
What's it called?
It's called What Are You Afraid Of? And it actually expands beyond the particular concern of stage fright into the whole notion of anxiety, which is such a universal theme at the minute. And he really interrogates that. And it's absolutely fascinating. It's also because he's so skilled and so amusing himself. It's very funny. So he goes into some very sort of dark and scary places. And there are a number of actors I know who said, oh, I don't think I can watch that, actually. That's too present a danger. But for the rest of us, it's fascinating to see how that process works, because it's really about how you are completely in the moment as an actor. And so the next line is going to come because it's the only line possible. And then suddenly a tiny fragment of doubt enters, and then it's suddenly very scary. So fascinating stuff.
Anything for the Dublin Theatre Festival?
Indeed. We have a wonderful show, which is actually also a personal experience, funny enough, although much of our work is ensembles and classics in New York. But this is a play written by Georgina Miller, who performs it. And it's about something that happened to her, again, maybe 15 years ago, when she was traveling the world as a carefree young kind of singleton, looking for adventure, looking for life. And she got a very serious illness that she didn't know what it was at first, and ended up in a very, very debilitated condition. And so that is going to be in Drecht for the Dublin Theatre Festival on the second week of the festival.
And that's called Free Falling.
It's called Free Falling, yeah.
Okay, Lynn, we always start the Culture Club with music, okay? And we always ask people to name the first single that they ever bought and as much as you could remember it. Now, you've got two choices you want to actually give us. First, tell us about the thing that you bought by The Sweet.
Well, I wasn't exactly a fan of The Sweet. I mean, most of their stuff was quite sort of glam rock machismo, which really wasn't my thing. But this is, somebody described it as a very superior pop song, and it's called Love Is Like Oxygen. And I just thought it had wonderful drama and great musicality. I just loved it. So I bought it as a single. I didn't buy many singles. This is the one.
Let's hear it. Since about 1978. It sounds like something out of a musical, doesn't it?
I suppose it does. It's got great drama and there's great sort of phases to it. There's all sorts of different instrumentations and a beautiful vocal performance by Brian Connolly and everything. I think it was written by their guitarist or drummer or something like that.
But the choices you gave us, your childhood memories, I understand, are hugely influenced by your father, particularly jazz.
Absolutely. My dad, I mean, my whole family is musical. My mum's a singer in a choir and stuff like that. But my father's taste is what really influenced me and my sister. So, and this, you know, I remember he loved female vocalists. He was hugely into Joe Stafford and Ella Fitzgerald and people like that. But my recent love of his was the singer Astrid Gilberto, who worked with a lot with Stan Getz, and they were a very famous pairing. And that was the bossa nova sound, very 1960s and very smooth, very laid back. He loved smooth jazz like Oscar Peterson or George Shearing, you know. And I learned a lot from him and his taste, but he was into Baroque music as well.
Well, we're going to play a little bit of Astrid Gilberto, and this is, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Agua de Beber.
Eu quis amar, mas tive medo e quis salvar.
Okay, tell me a little bit more about that.
I do not know Portuguese, but I used to sing that, sing along with her, making up the words as they sounded to me. So, and this was when I was a child, so my parents thought I was very precocious altogether, but I hadn't a clue what I was singing.
You gave us a long list of favourite albums.
Yeah, that was hard.
Okay, well, tell the listeners some of them. You've gone for, and I think standards amongst a lot of our listeners, like so Joni Mitchell and Paul Simon.
Yeah, well, they were my twin peaks, I suppose, when I was, you know, in my early 20s. And Paul Simon's been, you know, a great love of mine. But, you know, you can't be my age and not feel that Joni Mitchell speaks to you and for you. And her album, Hegira, was one of the things I listened to most. And there's a wonderful song called Refuge of the Roads and a great lyric in it, which if I remember, heart and humour and humility, he said, will lighten up your heavy load. And I've used that little saying every so often when I'm getting vexed by something. And it just sort of sums up a really great attitude to life. And it's, you know, born of her experiences along the road.
I'll talk more about Paul Simon in a little while, but you've also got the likes of Handel, Monteverdi and the Beatles in your list.
Well, the Beatles, you know, you'd say the Beatles is just so obvious. So in a way, I haven't chosen to focus on them because they're everything. And John Lennon was such an icon, but they all were. And I'm really glad that the Beatles have started to be recognised, because when I was at college, everybody, all the boys anyway, were into the Rolling Stones, you know. So it was Rolling Stones versus the Beatles. And I just always felt the Beatles.
Sorry, that was the Blur and Oasis of that generation.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And you kind of went, but the Beatles had such a great expanse of work and ideas, musical ideas. You know, the Rolling Stones are great now. But the originality that the Beatles were capable of was just stunning and still is. You know, how they came to think in all those myriad ways.
But you want us to play a little bit of the Renaissance composer Claudio Monteverdi. Explain.
Well, that was the other great influence on my life was my uncle Stuart Parker, the writer. And so he introduced me to the recordings of John Elliott Gardiner, first The Messiah and then this wonderful recording of L'Orfeo, Monteverdi. This is a very early opera, but in a way it's not opera as we know it. It's sound and still spectacle, but you get a great sense of movement in the music. And I think it's one of the greatest works of art ever written. And it just expresses such joy and sensuality and things that you don't expect, I suppose, from a Baroque classical piece. There's great emotion in it. There's great sort of colour and vitality and sexuality.
Well, what we have is Francesco Turisi's version of, and again, excuse my pronunciation on anything foreign, Si dolce e il tormento.
Now, this is Monteverdi, but a fragment of Monteverdi that is reinterpreted by the amazing Francesco Turisi. And Francesco is someone we worked with a few years ago with his band Tarab, which is a fusion of European classical, trad, North African music. And it's a thing I love is fusion, you know. So actually, this piece, Si dolce e il tormento, is a fusion of his jazz improvisation with this theme of Monteverdi. And as I was saying, it's not always plain sailing in the theatre. And many years ago, I was going through a particularly frustrating time. And I used to come home and put this CD on and catharsize my frustrations. Because although that piece is incredibly soothing, it goes on quite a journey, you know, and there's a whole sort of crazy improvised odyssey, which leaves you spent but a bit satisfied. And I'm hoping next year to do a little bit of work on a performance piece based around that with Kilkenny.
Okay. Now, favourite bands, you've mentioned the Beatles And we'll get to Paul Simon because he's also the best gig you were at. But you also have a love for 10cc and Roxy Music. And Brian Ferry was once a guest on this programme. Love to get him to do a Culture Club at some stage. I'm sure he had enormous musical influences. Why have you picked those?
I was drawn to the art house crowd, I suppose. You know, oddly enough, not so much to Bowie, these bands really appeal to me, again, because they're quite dramatic. They're quite theatrical, put it that way. I loved Ferry. Well, I mean, you know, I fancied Ferry. Come on. And I just love the kind of visual sort of craziness of early Roxy stuff. And but 10cc were quite a theatrical band. They were very, very, they were sort of art students, the two of them were anyway. And they loved painting pictures and doing little scenarios, almost like little screenplays set to music. And that really attracted me as well.
Best gig you ever had? Kid Creole and the Coconuts.
Yes. In the stadium, circa 1981, myself and Pauline McGlynn and Declan Hughes went to this wonderful gig. And so August Darnell and the Coconuts. And it was just such fun. It was so high energy and stylish, but not taking itself seriously. And yeah, we had a great time.
And Paul Simon at the RDS in 2018. What is it about Paul Simon for you?
Paul Simon tells the stories that we of the modern age, you know. And I was thinking that gig in the RDS was just such a beautiful night. I'm not a great gig goer, actually, partly because I'm so small that I can't see half the time. But there was such a beautiful atmosphere at that performance. And his voice isn't great, Nick. I was actually going to choose a song of his called American Tune, which is a great sort of poetic piece written about the condition of America and the kind of lost sense of American liberals over the last few years. But I changed my mind because of sort of recent events. He wrote the album this comes from, Still Crazy After All These Years, is again one of my favorites, and that song is one I sing to myself. But the piece that I've chosen from it is called Gone at Last, and it's about a moment of despair that turns on a sixpence and becomes something much more buoyant. And given recent events in America, I just thought maybe that should be thought of.
Let's have a little bit of it.
Once in a while, from out of nowhere, when you don't expect it and you're unprepared, somebody will come and lift you higher, and your burdens will be shared.
Yes, I do, baby. If I hadn't met you, I might still be sinking fast. I've had a long streak of bad luck, but I pray it's gone at last.
Gone, gone.
Paul Simon, Gone at Last, from Still Crazy After All These Years. What about movies? You have nominated for us The Third Man with Orson Welles. Tell us why you've picked that.
Well, that's a wonderful Graham Greene story that directed by Carol Reed. You know, it's just one of the great classics and one of the great theme tunes as well. But Welles performed, and Joseph Cotten, and Welles gives such extraordinary performances in that, and it's one of the great moments when you first see Harry Lime, you know, and Welles, of course, with his classic wit and invention, contributes, I believe, one of the most influential lines.
Let's hear a little bit from it.
Victims, don't be melodramatic.
Look down there. Would you really feel any pity if one of those dots stopped moving forever? If I offered you £20,000 for every dot that stopped, would you really, old man, tell me to keep my money? Or would you calculate how many dots you could afford to spend? Free of income tax, old man. Free of income tax. The only way you can save money now, Dave.
A lot of good your money will do you in jail.
That jail's in another zone. There's no proof against me. Besides you.
I should be pretty easy to get rid of.
Pretty easy?
Wouldn't be too sure.
I carry a gun. Don't think they'd look for a bullet wound after you hit that ground.
Orson Welles in The Third Man. You also have, from the more modern era, one really interesting choice you've made, because it was a movie that still sticks with me, Manchester by the Sea, which is a beautifully paced but also very emotional movie.
Yeah, it's just one of those films that take you into a place where you just never expected to go. It's as dark as you get, but it's so human. It's so beautifully told. It's a simple situation, actually, that just explodes anyone's sense of self, purpose, or life. And that sounds really grim, but it is. And it's one of the times when a work of art is so brilliant that it can be that black and be that terrifying.
Now, here's a really difficult one for you. Favorite play or musical, theatre show? You have a long list. Give us some examples.
Some examples. Well, of course, a lot of them are Rough Magic shows. One of my favourite shows was Arthur Reardon's Improbable Frequency, Declan Hughes' Digging for Fire or Love in a Bottle. Michael Frayn's Copenhagen is one of the great, great plays that we've done, as was Carol Churchill's Top Girls, one of the very first shows we ever did. But I suppose my favourite play, and this is, you know, an emotional tie, is Stuart Parker's Pentecost, which was one of the first really sort of outstanding plays we were able to take abroad. That is one that speaks to the moment, speaks to any moment.
Okay, well, you've told us a lot about your taste there. What about musicals?
It's odd that I have done a few musicals, and I'm not a natural musicals person. You know, I'm not into the Andrew Lloyd Webber stuff or Wicked or any of those things. But there is one that me and some friends went to in the National Theatre in the early 80s, which blew our socks off and was one of the reasons we all went into theatre. And this was the early Rough Magicians, and it's Guys and Dolls, which is so funny, so witty, so sharp, and great, great tunes. And it was great performances from that cast, including Bob Hoskins and Julie Covington and Ian Charlson. It was just fantastic.
Well, the clip we have is not from the 1982 original, but it's the 1992 new Broadway cast recording of Sit Down, You're Rockin' the Boat.
I dreamed last night I got on the boat to heaven, and by some chance I had brought my dice along, and there I stood and I hollered, someone fade me. But the passengers, they knew right from wrong. For the people all said, sit down, you're rocking the boat.
People all said, sit down, you're rocking the boat.
And the devil will drag you under by the sharp lapel of your checkered coat. Sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down.
Sit down, you're rocking the boat.
I sailed away on that little boat to heaven, and by some chance found a bottle in my fist. And there I stood, nicely passing out the whiskey, but the passengers were bound to resist. For the people all said, beware,
all said,
you're
beware,
on a heavy trip.
Beware.
People all said, beware,
all said, beware,
you'll scuttle a ship, and the devil will drag you under.
Okay, that's from Guys and Dolls. Now, favourite book? You have been able to nominate one for us, which is great. Samuel Beckett's Murphy. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I mean, my taste would veer more to the Jane Austen, even in general, but Murphy just knocked me for six. And because it's Beckett just being so funny about the intricacies of a very meagre life. But there's a little bit in it where he, one of his characters talks about, she just looks up at the sky and he says, the sky was cool, bright, full of movement, anointed her eyes, reminded her of Ireland. And when I was living in London, that line really resonated with me. And so it's uncharacteristically lyrical for Beckett, but the rest of the novel is just pure satirical, bleak Beckett at its best.
But we have a little clip from the opening of Murphy narrated by Stephen Hogan.
The sun shone, having no alternative, on the nothing new. Murphy sat out of it, as though he were free, in a mew in West Brompton. Here, for what might have been 6 months, he had eaten, drunk, slept, and put his clothes on and off in a medium-sized cage of northwestern aspect, commanding an unbroken view of medium-sized cages of southeastern aspect. Soon he would have to make other arrangements, for the Mew had been condemned. Soon he would have to buckle to and start eating, drinking, sleeping, and putting his clothes on and off in quite alien surroundings. He sat naked in his rocking chair of undressed teak, guaranteed not to crack, warp, shrink, corrode, or creak at night. It was his own. It never left him. The corner in which he sat was curtained off from the sun. The poor old sun in the Virgin again for the billionth time.
Beckett and Murphy, you mentioned that Jane Austen, Evelyn Waugh among your favourite writers. My notes tell me the reason that you selected them is that you've got so many contemporary novelists who are friends of yours. I mean, you worked, for example, with Anne Enright for years and stuff.
Yeah, and I've just finished working with Hilary Fannin and Declan Hughes. Yes, I mean, I can't pick a favourite, can I?
Given that they're all your friends. Okay, television. And let's talk about I, Claudius. You're not the first person who's picked I, Claudius in this spot from the 1970s and an adaptation of a novel by Robert Graves from back in 1934. Why have you picked I, Claudius?
Well, I was allowed to see it because my parents just let me watch it because it was history, you know.
And you were a child at this stage.
I was pretty young, yeah. And my parents were careful people, but they thought this was all, you know, very educational. And of course, it's unbelievably steamy and wonderful. So there was a sort of double joy in it. But you were learning a lot about those historical characters. But it was the acting. It's always the acting, you know. I mean, Brian Blessed at his magnificent best, but the extraordinary Shan Phillips who played Livia, and a cast of some of the top actors in the UK at that time.
We have a clip featuring her with Derek Jacobi and John Hurt as well.
You are a monster, aren't you?
Whatever you say, great-grandmother.
Did you know your nephew was a monster, Claudius?
Oh, is he old enough to have acquired that title?
Oh, he started very young, didn't you, monster? I searched his room one day and I found a little green talisman that told me a very remarkable story. Or rather confirmed one I'd heard from another quarter.
A green talisman, like my brother wore?
The one your brother wore.
Do you think it's safe that Uncle Claudius should be told my secret? Or are you going to poison him?
Oh, he's quite safe. And remember this, monster. Your Uncle Claudius here is a phenomenon. He's so old-fashioned that because he's sworn to protect his brother's children, he will never harm you. And remember this, too. Thrasyllus has prophesied that he will avenge your death so you cannot harm him.
I, Claudius. So you still have a lot of really good modern television you like. The list I have is the likes of The Bear and Call My Agent, that brilliant French show, and Mayor of Easttown, which was one of probably Kate Winslet's best in many respects.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these were watched during lockdown.
COVID lockdown, yeah. We can still just about mention it, yeah.
Call My Agent got us all through it, I think. Again, it's the acting, you know. Call My Agent particularly, of course, because I work in the theatre and, you know, there's so many in-jokes. I mean, anyone can watch it. But The Bear is interesting because it's a little bit like theatre, but sort of to the power 10, in that they have an opening night every night. And it's also about artistic obsession and the kind of drive you have to corral a team around you and build that team and hold them together. And I think that's got an application to our work as well.
Okay, we're nearly finished. We always ask everyone to finish with cultural buried treasure. You've got two. You want to mention your uncle first?
My uncle's work was hugely done and hugely popular while he was alive, but he died young in 1988. And since then, I've done a few of his productions and then the lyric and Field Day and Tinderbox in the North, but the work needs to be seen again. And I think it's time for a really big look at that stuff.
Retrospective of Stuart yeah. Parker. And to finish, you have picked the song Crazy by Seal, but tell us the story behind that selection.
Well, in 2018, we were, like many other theatre companies, you know, having undergone some fairly substantial cuts in funding and all of that, having to look at a new way of making work. And we found that in the partnership with Kilkenny, Arts Festival. So our first foray with them was an open-air production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. And it enabled us to do work of scale with a wonderful ensemble of young actors that included a certain Paul Mescal. Wonder what happened to him.
And that's only 6 years ago. And think of him now, he's a major international superstar.
Exactly. But he was part of our ensemble and a very, very wonderful one. And just catching the spirit of that time, I loved this song Crazy by Seal. And I think, you know, we all had to get a little bit crazy in order to pull through all of that. And he sang it as our finale.
Well, it's not him singing this one. This is Seal.
This is Seal.
A man decides after 70 years that what he goes there for is to unlock the door. Well, those around him criticize and sleep.
What a great tune to finish on. How did Paul Mescal sing it, by the way?
Brilliantly. Dennis Glossy, our sound designer, put together a backing track and Paul did it with Mike, and it was the finale. It was the curtain call, basically. And everyone just went wild.
I can imagine. Lynn Parker, it's been terrific having you. Thank you so much. Congratulations on 40 years of Rough Magic Theatre Company, which I think you started with Declan Hughes back then with a small, small grant, and many more years of success to you. Thank you for being with us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.